Welcome to The Athlete and the NARP. I'm Jenna Daly, and I'm the athlete.
And I'm Claire Fenton, and I'm the NARP. And if you don't know what a NARP is, then you're one too. Welcome to the 11th episode of The Athlete and the NARP. Today we're going to be talking about the recent rise or surge in NIL and what the future of it might look like for these college athletes now that it's really seeming to get into a groove. And so I'm going to have Jenna kick it off with the first example slash topic we're going to be talking about because she has been working on this in her classes and it's been especially pertinent for her.
Yeah, it's just kind of been in the forefront of my mind. One of my projects, it's digital and social media strategy, and we're talking about how to boost brand awareness for a company. And we decided to actually talk about NIL and how a paid partnership with college athletes would actually boost this company's awareness and even acquire more customers. And so like that's been really cool to think about. And one person we've been talking about a lot, which Claire and I have also sent to each other and talked about, is Jared McCain on Duke's men's basketball team. He has a whole host of different NIL deals, especially now that he's recently blown up. What comes to my mind is his TikTok viral singing, which is actually funny because that's what we're using in my marketing class for our example. But the one thing that I think Claire and I have talked about the most is the Skims ad that was just released,
right before the kickoff of the tournament.
Right before March Madness. And so we were talking about how it was an interesting play for Skims to use college basketball players and release it right before March Madness. I thought that was brilliant to release it right before because everyone's talking about it. Everyone's looking at these players and then you see that. So that was great, just timing for brand awareness right there. And then I also thought it was interesting because Skims is now a widely known brand. Everyone knows, I'd say everyone knows what Skims is. So to see a company at this scale create a whole campaign around college athletes was really cool for me to see. And then that kind of sparked this whole conversation of are brands, especially mainstream brands, now utilizing NIL and college athletes more now that it's been a few years since NIL has become a thing. And I thought that was cool because it really shows how brands are building NIL into their actual brand strategy and marketing strategy.
Skims is really interesting in particular because they've kind of done not a 180, but they've really shifted their focus, I think recently, even in the past year or so, from being like a women's body shape line to they've started using male professional athletes to first market other things. Like they had Patrick Mahomes on and like Neymar and a few other athletes modeling some of their men's line of clothes when that first dropped. And then now they've made this whole pivot to, like Jenna had said, with Jared and a few other basketball players, college athletics. And it was interesting, I think, that they did it for male college basketball players before female college basketball players. That's just, again, an interesting marketing strategy and tactic they went with. And I'm wondering if they're going to expand to women's players at some point. But that's, like Jenna said, that's a massive, massive brand. Really, really crazy, I think, for me, that you can be like a college basketball player and be in an ad for Skims, like be part of kind of the Kardashian brand circle. That's insane to me. And with Jared in particular, I think I've been following him pretty closely, and the brand deals he gets are pretty insane. I've only been really paying attention to him for the past couple months or so, but in that time frame, I've seen ads for Downy, American Eagle, Crocs, Celsius, CVS, Skims. There might be others that I haven't seen, but those are all crazy massive brands. And I think one of the ones that really impressed me the most, or I thought was really cool, was Sally Hansen. So Jared is known for painting his nails, like usually just like blue or white or sometimes purple, like dew colors. And I think mostly he's been supported with that. Obviously, some people kind of clap back and have their two cents on it and not wanting him to express himself in that way. But he did an ad with Sally Hansen very recently where he was just like, I'm going to sit down and paint my nails and I'm going to just tell you why. And he's like, it's just a way to express myself, be creative, blah, blah, blah. That's a partnership that's really particular to who he is and is very authentic and lets him be himself while also, you know, having that brand deal and earning some money in that way and just letting him be authentic. Even though I know it's an ad, like, I enjoyed watching it and hearing that from him. That doesn't stop with the men's players. They've been getting, I think especially with football, that's kind of where a lot of these deals have come through. But especially with March Madness now, we've seen a ton of ads and a ton of TV commercials with women's players as well. Like, Jenna and I were talking right before this, but Caitlin Clark has an ad with State Farm that has, like, Jimmy Butler in it. Like, that's really, really crazy. That was something that would just... it would never have been possible like 2 or 3 years ago. State Farm, that's shown like all the time, like every commercial break when I was watching March Madness. It was on. Juju Watkins, this is an AT&T commercial with Joel Embiid. There's an ad for, I believe it's Powerade, that has Flaje Johnson in it from LSU. Cameron Brinks in a New Balance commercial with like Kawhi Leonard, Jamal Murray, and a few other players. And these commercials were shown constantly, like during the men's game, during the women's game, like all those ad breaks. And it's just so crazy to see that level of stardom given to these players now. And it's coincided, obviously, with the rise of women's basketball in general. But I think that visibility is like so important to help grow the women's game in particular. When they're on national TV like that in those national breaks alongside NBA greats. And I think that that's like for women's sports in particular and female athletes, that's something that is especially beneficial for them, even if they have to be of that magnitude to get those types of deals. It at least brings visibility to the sport in a way that wasn't possible before. And I think the way that March Madness has gone in general this year and the amount of people that have tuned into the women's tournament, I think has shown that there is a market for that and that they are deserving of that type of promotion.
I like the point that you brought up about it kind of boosting viewership and maybe even credibility of women's sports. And I definitely think that's true, especially even with like female viewership. And so I think we've talked about it before, but pretty much how to market to female fans is by marketing specific players and allowing them to get to know those players very well and on a personal level, not just like how they play and the skills and things. And yeah, having them in commercials and having them doing deals, and especially when they choose deals that are representing of themselves too. Like, I know Paige Beckers in her partnership with Chegg, she's not just representing Chegg. I forget specifically what it is, but they asked her to put that money towards like a specific initiative that she was really interested in, and so that like furthers what she's passionate about while collaborating with like this larger brand. And so that's really cool to see for fans. And then I guess my other point I wanted to make, I think it's really cool that, I mean, NIL is a thing in the first place, just because we definitely have talked about in past episodes how colleges profit so much on athletes. And so I really think it's only fair if athletes can also profit on themselves and leverage their platforms that they gain with this national and sometimes global attention. I think that's really cool. And then especially as a student athlete myself, like even though this is a D3 school, it's still accessible to me. Like if I want to partake in different deals, I can, and I can find a way to build that platform and create it. There's different platforms that help connect athletes specifically with brands that are looking for college athletes to be promoters or to do deals. And so I've been exploring those options, and like right now I even have one partnership, which is really fun to do. And so I think that's a really fun aspect of it too.
Every time I see these commercials or see these kind of opportunities, it does make me reflect a little bit on how these athletes have been essentially robbed of, in some cases, millions of dollars. Right. Athletes who did college sports before NIL and didn't have the opportunity to have this type of money for, you know, like Jenna said, they bring so much revenue to these schools. They're the draw for these schools, especially in places like a lot of times in the South where that is the team. Like, they don't have a pro sports team, something like Alabama or Auburn. They're just finally getting their due. And these schools are finally having to pay them, in my mind, what they're worth. There's definitely two sides to it. We do want to talk a little bit about kind of maybe some of the weaknesses in the system right now and what could be improved on in the future. People will complain about these athletes being given money, I guess, out of school to come and play for a school. Now that they're technically allowed to do that, they can be paid, quote unquote, to come to a given school or a given program or whatever. And people are like, should that be allowed? Blah, blah, blah. In my mind, it's like they're getting paid what they're worth. So if a school is willing to pay somebody, I'm just making up a number, $20,000 to come and be on the roster, that's what they're worth. And given the amount of revenue they bring in through television viewership, and now the schools can even market them as individual players too. Before, schools weren't allowed to set up deals to brand an athlete with something or promote them in that way, but now they are. So I can understand some of the criticism for the system the way it is right now. And I know one of the big things that people have talked about is the state of kind of the transfer portal and the rate at which athletes are just jumping from school to school because they can be paid more at a different program because they kind of, in a way, outgrow the school that they're at right now and can just move somewhere else. And before, there used to be rules about when you transferred, you had to sit out for a year or a certain amount of time, and those have gone away for the time being since COVID, pretty much, or that was one of the big markers of that change. So now people can just transfer to school with no penalty, which obviously opens up the door for kind of hopping around if there are more lucrative deals to be made at a larger school. So for example, one of the big ones that has been talked about is college football. The portal for that has grown a ton. And at the Division I level in 2019, so again, before COVID and these new rules, on average, like on a roster, 6.4% of the players were transfers. In the past season, in 2023, that number jumped to 20.5. So pretty much one in every five players on a roster was a transfer. Again, some people don't like that because, again, it's just like these athletes that are really students, supposedly, first and foremost, are kind of just switching from school to school with no penalty. And there's no regulation on that now that had once been there. So I don't know if there are plans to bring that back at some point. My brother actually... We went to watch Georgia State play Miami of Ohio earlier this year, and he was like, guess how many starters on this team are transfers? And I was like, I don't know, one, two? He was like, all of them. And on the whole roster, it was quite a lot. I think it was over 50% for sure of the players on the total roster were transfers. And actually, for the starting lineup, I'm actually going to qualify that, too, even better. It was actually all five of them. It was their first year at the school. So it wasn't even that they were just transfers. It was their first year at Miami of Ohio.
Wow.
And so if you're a player that's been established there, obviously, you've just watched a whole starting lineup. Yeah. You just watch a whole starting lineup be wiped out for people that have not spent any time at this school. So in that way, it's hard to build. You know, people would argue it's hard to build like a team culture or team loyalty or feel like there's integrity to a program in that sense. Miami's probably not bringing in a ton of NIL money, but maybe it is more than the other schools they were at before. Maybe it has nothing to do with it. I don't know. But there definitely is this transfer phenomenon. Haley Van Lith, actually, from LSU, just declared she's entering the transfer portal for the, I believe, third time. So this would
be her third school
in as many years.
It's very loosely reminding me of the conference realignment, which we talked about, and how people, or I guess schools, are moving conferences because of financial gains. And the transfer portal discussion with NIL is kind of making me think that.
And the NIL was part of the whole conference realignment thing as well. That was an incentive for schools to move.
Yeah. And I was just having a conversation last night about how athletes are choosing specific schools based on NIL deals, and this is all like unofficial, but pretty much coaches are saying, if you come here, we can connect you with these brands, or we can work something out. So maybe we can't provide X amount of scholarship money, but we can get you money in this way. And so it's just another, that's not a secret that college, if coaches want you to be at their school, especially D1 and D2, like, you will be there if they will find the money to get you there. Mm-hmm. And this is just another added layer to making that possible.
And it used to be done illegally. Yes. It might still even be done illegally.
But I'm sure it is.
I guess players getting paid is nothing new. It's just now that it's legal for them to get paid.
Yeah, now it just makes it easier.
Now it's just not, like, a crime. And kind of to your point about schools providing that incentive to players to come play, Duke, their men's basketball team, which, again, Jared McCain is on, hired a general manager this year to help players seek NIL income. So that was just even one team in and of itself hired a general manager to help players like Jared and some of his other teammates find these deals, which obviously if you're an athlete, I can see why that would be really nice to have.
I think that's pretty cool.
It's definitely really cool, and it takes the burden off of you to try to figure out how to navigate all of that, and you have someone who knows how to help you, you know, like, not get ripped off, or
right.
knows what deals are good and what brands have integrity in that way. And in some of the research I was doing, people were saying NIL is just kind of leapt onto the scene, and it's fairly unregulated as far as it goes, and there are concerns that that might not be super sustainable. And it was actually kind of interesting. There is a book coming out by this Pittsburgh lawyer named Marty Blazer, who was hired by the FBI earlier. I don't remember exactly what year, but quite a while ago. He had worked with the FBI to offer coaches money to send prospective athletes to his financial advisory company. So he was just essentially holding up a sting operation to try to catch these coaches accepting financial bribes for players, which is obviously not legal. And he said 100% of the coaches that he offered bribes took them. And from some of the, a lot of them were from big name schools like Louisville, Arizona, LSU, USC. That's kind of to my point where I was saying, like, this type of payment always happened. Now it's just legal. But his point was, he sat down with the NCAA kind of after this investigation, and based on this experience that he had, where he's like, these coaches, like, literally all of them are taking this money. He's like, he basically said at the time, like, NIL will make things worse, not better, if it's not implemented properly, because you have to protect these athletes from being exploited. If it's like he called it a Wild West system, where these athletes come onto the scene, they're like 18 years old-ish, you know, if you're entering college around that time. Especially if you're like at a big football program or a big basketball program, you're probably going to get bombarded with people that are trying to scam you or rip you off or get you to sign things. And you don't know anything about how to handle your finances or how to manage your money. And that's going to be really difficult for you to manage if there's not regulations in place and support systems set up to help you navigate. I saw a ranking on ESPN the other day of, like, the top five basketball players and their NIL money. And, like, for example, Caitlin Clark is purported to have around $3 million from NIL money already.
Wow.
And she's, I guess, around our age, so 22-ish years old. That's a lot of money to have, even if it's anywhere around that number. That's a lot of money to have as a 22-year-old. And if you don't know how to manage your finances and how to handle that, like, that can spell trouble. Right now, there's really nothing in place. It's kind of on a school-by-school basis. The NCAA seems to not want to deal with this because it's been 3 years at this point. I feel like if they wanted to have regulations, they could. But I feel like that's really something that – I don't know what's going to push them to do it. They seem like an organization that is very much, like, hands-off until something awful happens and then do damage control. But, you know – we'll see if they have anything planned for the future.
Yeah, they're definitely, as we've seen in other cases, a slow-to-react organization. But something else that I thought of when you were talking about how brands could take advantage of athletes also need to think about the fact that they are linking themselves with these companies. And so I would hope that they do the research before signing the contracts and saying yes, and not just looking at, oh, this is a big name brand with a lot of money attached to it, or I could get a lot of recognition for this, and really taking the time to choose ones that feel authentic to themselves and represent what they value. And one thing we talked about in one of my classes, that it was basically like, you need to know where your values are and where you'll walk away. And this was, we were talking about, like, negotiations and stuff, but I think this is true, because if you start signing all these brand deals and you are saying yes to all these things, and then you look at kind of your whole portfolio and none of them align, then it's like, that's not building your personal brand. So then for athletes, like, that actually doesn't really help you. It might make you a ton of money, but in the long term, that's not actually beneficial. And it eventually might even be harmful if some of those brands have conflicting ideologies or beliefs that don't really align with what you have, but people are viewing you in the lens of these brands. And so it's really important to consider that partnership, which it goes both ways, but I think athletes should be very aware of that as well.
I think one individual example of this that I found really interesting was SMU women's volleyball player Alex Glover. I had never heard of her before, but she has, at one point during the season, she had 41 different partnerships with various brands, including Ulta Beauty and Kellogg's. And she's basically, I think she's a good example of someone who's very intentional about choosing those partnerships and building a brand, because she's kind of created this whole social media presence about being a Division I athlete. Like, I took a look through her Instagram, and it's a lot of, like, get ready with me's and, you know, volleyball tips and, like, a day in her life of her being a student athlete and all of that. She has, like, a social media presence around that and puts, it looks like, a lot of work into building that and making it very professional and something that is kind of sustainable for her as, like, a second income almost. Meta had an NIL Empower 2.0 program, I guess, and she was invited to be one of the people to speak. And she had, like, a little blurb about herself that said that she has over 10 years of experience in professional modeling and acting that gave her the foundational knowledge necessary to win in this NIL landscape, with prior knowledge of how to source deals and communicate her value to brands. And so I think that's kind of what part of what Jenna was just talking about, is knowing your worth, knowing what's important to you, what is unique about you, and sourcing out brands and deals that align with that in a way that feels authentic and not just a money grab. And I think just because it is so new, that's not something that all athletes have knowledge of at this point, and nor should they be expected to. I mean, honestly, when you're a freshman in college, do you even really know who you are? Like, maybe not. You're still pretty young. So it's not something they're expected to know, but there should be resources and structures in place to help them navigate that and help them figure that out. And kind of pretending that it isn't a problem or pretending that it doesn't exist won't make it go away for these athletes. You have to address the fact that these athletes are highly lucrative. Very big brands want to work with them, and they shouldn't have to do it just 100% on their own. And right now, unless a school implements specific structures for that, then they might just be.
I thought it was cool that Duke has a GM specifically for this. I think, yeah, as you mentioned, it really protects the athletes. And I think it also has to do with protecting Duke as well. But I think that is important, maybe having, doesn't necessarily need to be team by team, but at least a couple people in the athletics department that have a great grasp of NIL and partnerships with brands, maybe even some experience working with high-level brand partnerships. I think that would be really cool. Even here, we have an app that is kind of like our, I guess, home for things like that. And so it's all of our media for track meets, like all of our pictures will go in there, and then you can discover different opportunities. And I think it's still in its starting phase, I'd say. Like, I think the app needs to be improved, but it is pretty helpful to have that. And I also use this other app that specifically has basically job listings for partnerships, and you apply, and then that is linked with my other app, and so it just gets directly reported to my, like, to Emory, which is really cool. So that kind of reduces that for me. But yeah, at the same time, like, I'm still going through the listings and reading the contracts, which I would hope that anyone who uses this is reading the contract, because they're not, so far, nothing I've seen has been, like, different than the job description, but still really important to, like, read who exactly is paying you or giving you the products. And I don't think I'm at a level where I would need an agent or a GM or something, but if I wanted to build a personal brand and like spend a ton of time on that, then yeah, I would definitely want that support.
Obviously, the scale and magnitude of these types of issues will differ from school to school, Division 3 to Division 1. Different schools have different resources, allocate their money differently to have various structures in place to help their athletes. And I think it's tough for me to feel as though whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, that it's up to the school, because I don't know. I think I was reading this article from the Harvard Crimson that was basically the main gist or thesis of it was that the Ivy League in particular, they're arguing, is going to end up suffering heavily and losing a lot of talent because currently they refuse to establish an NIL collective across the board. Like, all schools are refusing to do that. And an NIL collective, in case you don't know, is a place where donors can send money to be distributed to various players and teams for NIL purposes. So it's essentially having a pool of money that one of the main things that they can do with it is say, hey, from this pool of, again, making this money up, $100,000, we're going to give $10,000 to this player to get him to come to our school. We're going to give this guy $15,000, this person $5,000, et cetera, et cetera. Ivy League schools are refusing to do that. And that, in combination with the fact that A, they don't give athletic scholarships, B, these new transfer rules make it really easy for kids to switch schools whenever they want, C, other schools have far more lucrative opportunities, they're having to face this reality of their best athletes, which is their best chance of growing Ivy League sports and having that promotion for themselves, are going to end up switching to different schools where they can make money. And there was already an example of this where Harvard's, their men's basketball team, their best freshman from this past year has entered the transfer portal. I think it's already really tough for academic schools like that in the Ivy League, and sometimes just academic schools in general, to find an athlete that is smart enough to go to their school and then also has the athletic ability to perform there. Do that work to get this like really small pool of athletes that can fit that description, and then after 1 year they're up and gone because you can't, or you refuse, it's not that you can't, you refuse to pay them money like the rest of the NCAA. And I know part of the Ivy League in general, their idea is we pride ourselves on academics, that's what the students are here for first. Everything else is just an extracurricular. Like, that is part of their brand. They say that up front. That's their philosophy. Great. I don't know that philosophy is going to work moving forward, given the current landscape of where NIL is.
I think that's going to have serious implications on their athletic performance. And I don't know how much they care about that. However, there are strong programs in some of the Ivy Leagues that are very well known.
Definitely.
And if you're losing players because of these NIL rules, then yeah, I think they're going to run into trouble, and I think they're going to have to change something about that. I see them standing firmly on kind of like the anti-collective money, and like I don't see them changing their stance on athletic scholarships, but I could see coaches kind of doing the under the table NIL, like, listen, I can't explicitly give you this and the school can't explicitly give you this, but if you come here, then maybe we could get you in contact with them. And I think that's one loophole that they could find in it. But at the same time, I think that there are other schools that are able to do that a lot better and in the open, which is a lot more promising and it's more secure for athletes. I think that there's schools that are just as academically rigorous as the Ivy Leagues while also having really competitive athletic teams that are very attractive to the prospective student athletes that Ivy Leagues typically gain. And so by being so anti-NIL and athletic-based money, I think that the Ivy League is going to lose out a lot.
It's a pretty deadly combination, I think, of not providing athletes with athletic scholarships and then also not paying them, where you could go to a school, play sports for free, and get money on top of that. Like
that, how do you say no to that?
That's a pretty stark difference, especially if you are an athlete where finances are something that is important to you and yes. something you need to consider. I don't blame athletes at all for, you know, maybe making that shift. If they find success at the Ivy League level and someone from the ACC, for example, or the Pac-12 or the SEC offers them a spot, like a roster spot on another program, like that's really hard to say no to, and I don't blame them for that. I don't know. I think some people are also upset at maybe the integrity, I think I've said before, the morality of the game, kind of the collegiate game kind of going out the window with all of this. In that Crimson article, they were talking to an alum who said, "When I talk to coaches at other universities, they are all unanimously saying that this is not a sustainable model." And he also said, "It's robbing a lot of these coaches from the joy of coaching because they recruit and they feel like it's a transactional activity."
But hasn't it always been a transactional activity?
I mean, I get that now it's more, again, it's more out in the open now, where you can be very explicit and not illegally say, "We can offer you this amount of money, we can offer you these types of deals." But at the same time, like, I get why it's robbing us of the joy of it. But, like, again, these athletes are getting what they're worth. Like, it's...
Also, they were being... My point in saying that hasn't it always been transactional is that coaches have always used players for their benefit. Like, colleges have used players for their benefit. Like, it's not... It's always been, like, a one-sided market, and now finally it's two-sided.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's definitely fair. And I get maybe these Ivy League schools, right? If you're an Ivy League coach and you feel like you can't entice your players with anything financial, I get maybe that is a struggle, and I can understand how you feel like you have this great athlete who would succeed at your program, but it's not feasible or it just doesn't make sense financially for them to take you up on it. I can get why that would be frustrating or feel like everything's transactional in that sense. But at the same time, I mean, college sports, especially at the football and basketball level to some extent, for so long it has essentially been treated like a professional sports league, other than the athletes. Like, everything else about it, the way that it's promoted, the spectacle around it, the amount of people that tune in. For the Iowa-UConn Final Four game, the women's Final Four game that just happened, it was the most watched basketball event on ESPN ever. So that type of numbers for collegiate basketball has been bigger than any professional event, and this is men's or women's, ever on ESPN. Collegiate sports has, for a long time, had this massive fan base. They've had the spectacle. They play in stadiums that can fit 70 to 100,000 people, and they're filled every week. They're on national television. All of this, it's been acted like it's professional league for forever. Now athletes are finally allowed to start acting like professional athletes in a way. And now coaches, schools are having to feel the blowback of that a bit, where now an athlete has leverage and now an athlete has a way to stand up for themselves and let them have their true worth. And I get why that might be frustrating, but at the same time, I think it's important to recognize that part of this just is the reality now, and it probably always should have been the reality. Just because it was what it was before doesn't mean it was the right way of doing things.
For this week's Fun Friday, Claire and I will be blind ranking specific sports topics that we have selected for each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no rhyme or reason to what we selected, just things we thought would be fun to do.
Yeah.
So we're both actually really excited for this segment. So
the first topic is athlete game day superstitions. And so I actually made this a little more specific, and I asked my teammates what their superstitions are. So we're going to go through them, and you can rank them based on personal opinion of which one you think is best, with obviously one being the best.
Exciting.
Okay, so the first one we have is wearing the same undergarments, like socks, lucky pair of underwear, or like a sports bra.
Yeah, that one's a classic. I'm not personally super superstitious, so I've never really like tried any of these myself. So it's kind of just like going off of what I think feels good. I feel like that one's just a classic. I'm going to put it at 2.
Yeah, like there's nothing really there's special nothing about really it, but so many people
right,
do it.
Yeah, but I'm expecting some of them, I don't know. Sometimes people do really weird things, so I'm giving some room for stuff lower at the bottom.
True, true, true. Okay. Number 2 is writing motivational messages on their hands, like in Sharpie.
That's definitely cute. I know if I did that, it would just all sweat off. So I'm gonna go. I'll just put that at a 3. I think the idea is cute. In practicality, it's losing a little bit of its oomph. But
okay,
I'm gonna go 3 for it.
Okay. Our third one is cracking their knuckles right before the start. So, like, you're on the line. You have to crack them right before the gun goes off.
That one's really random. I like it, though. Okay, I'm setting myself up for a bad situation here because I'm going to give it a 4.
Okay.
Just because I think I would forget to do that. It's cool. I like it. I'm just like, I also can't crack my knuckles, so.
I can't either.
Yeah, tough to do. But I like it. Nothing wrong with it. I just don't want to put it at the bottom, but I also don't want to put it at the top. So now I've potentially set myself up for something bad here, given we have 1 in 5 left.
Okay, we'll see. But I mean, I would be happy with that.
Okay.
Number 4 is carrying their uniform in a special tote bag for every single meet.
Five. I'm like, five. I don't want to go, you know, shit on them too much because it is their special tradition, but I'm going to go 5.
Honestly, I think that one's so unique that I probably would have put it at 1. But okay, number 5, the last one is taking off all jewelry, including their running watch.
Okay, I mean, I wouldn't say that was like deserving of the 1 spot, but it's definitely not like that's practical. That is something I would do. Like out of all the ones we just said, that's like the one that I would do.
Is that makes
like
sense.
Be taking things off in like a special order and like putting them somewhere. So,
bonus question, can you guess which one is mine? I did this through high school, like religiously, and now I don't, like, I'm not really superstitious about it anymore, but if I feel like I need extra motivation, this is something I'll, like, consider doing.
So is it the hands thing?
No, I guess I give it away with the motivation
word.
Well,
you had
totally kind of
said, you had said a couple things in there in the, like, you were like, oh, I can't crack my knuckles and blah, blah, blah. So
true.
I was, like, down to the other 3, but.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
I guess I kind of gave it away. I also do wear the same socks, but that's because of practicality, and then the same sports bra, which like is kind of superstition, but it's more like I've gotten comfortable with it. So
and I
wouldn't say I need to wear that.
That one's fair too. Yeah.
No. But yeah.
All right. So the one that I'm gonna do first is Summer Olympic sports, just with, you know, Paris 2024 coming up. So first one I've got for you is beach volleyball.
And are we saying best to view or like
in terms of anything? It's not necessarily best to view, but just in terms of it being a sport at the Olympics, so whatever way you want to take that. Yeah, beach volleyball.
Okay, I gotta think of like what there is in the Summer Olympics that I like.
Sure. Yeah,
because honestly beach volleyball is up there. I think it's really cool.
I like beach volleyball.
Honestly, not much can top it. I actually might put it at 1.
Are you going to put it at 1?
I think I am, because there are sports that I actually pay much more attention to, but in terms of like entertainment factor and just like the coolness of the sport, I actually think beach volleyball is up there.
Okay.
I'm always impressed by it too.
It's cool. It has that special factor of it being something you don't really get to see outside of the Olympics too. So I guess that's cool about it. But all right, number 2, ping pong.
Oh god.
Table tennis as it's probably officially known, but
yeah.
Ping pong.
My instinct is to put it at 5, but I'm like, there could easily be things that are worse. I'm gonna put it at 4.
Okay. Track.
Track is number 2 for sure.
Okay.
I probably follow track the most.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think it's cool, and I think a lot of other people watch it too.
Yeah, it's one of the big ones for sure. feel like the big three are like track, gymnastics, swimming for Summer Olympics. Yeah, exactly. For sure. Okay, fencing.
Okay, so I have 3 and 5 left. 3 and 5. I think I'm going to go 5. I don't... Who watches fencing? Like, that is so niche.
I think that was the smart decision, because the last one, which is going to go in slot number 3, is gymnastics.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, honestly, like...
That's a pretty good list.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I'm not too mad about that.
I think, yeah, you did smart with fencing there at the end.
Yeah. I was like, there really can't... I was like, ping pong and fencing. Like, those have to be the two bad, like, rough ones.
Uh-huh.
No shade to fencers.
No shade.
Or whatever they're called. My next list is the team-provided food that I receive for competitions.
Love this.
And I'm very intrigued because I think we have slightly different preferences for what we like. And so this will be fun.
Okay.
Okay. Number one, another classic, Olive Garden.
I've never had Olive Garden.
What?
No.
But that's, you've never had their breadsticks? That's
no. Well, I've had them. I think you can buy them and make them at home. So I think my mom has done that before.
Well, it's not the same as getting like a microwavable bag that they give you.
No.
Okay.
Never had those. Wow, that's surprising that that's one. Is this post-race or pre-race or both? Is it just things you've gotten?
These are, yeah. They're
just things you've gotten.
Things I've gotten.
Okay. I'll set it at 4 then.
Okay.
Just because it's kind of an unknown for me, but it also doesn't sound like super appealing off the bat. So, but anyway.
It's actually shocking to me that you haven't had Olive Garden, which will make the rest of the list interesting. Because now I'm questioning, like, have you had all of these? But I think you have.
Okay, we'll see.
You at least know about them. So, number 2 is Moe's.
Never had Moe's, but I know what it is.
Yes.
So, know the general vibe. I'll put that at... I'll put it at 3.
Okay. Just feeling it.
That's kind of what we're feeling. We're feeling middle of the road. Yeah. I'd rather have that than Olive Garden. So.
Interesting. Okay. Number 3 is Cava.
Have had that.
That's good. That's good.
I think I have to be safe and put that at number 1 just because I really like Mediterranean food, and also I don't want to put it. I feel like right now that's a safe number 1 for me right now to have like 2 and 5 left is as the open slots. So
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
Okay. Next option is Jimmy John's.
Ooh, I can't put that at 5. That's got to be a 2. I like Jimmy John's.
Really?
I like sandwich. Like I like subs. I love stuff like that. And it's like basic. Like there's nothing egregious about a sub.
Yeah. I guess for me, I've had it so many times.
That's also, you get sick of
that. I'm like, oh my God, another one.
Yeah. That's fair.
But honestly, out of all this, I should have done, like, all the sandwich options that we get and done, like, Jimmy John's, Jason's Deli, and, like, of those. I can rank those. I'll tell you, Jimmy John's is the top one for the sandwich options.
Okay. It's up there.
But, okay. And your last one that goes at number 5 is Panera.
Okay. I mean, I would probably re-rank that a little higher just in terms of practicality. But also, Panera's, like, lost its groove in the past, like, 5 years or so. So... I don't know.
Okay. Like, yes. But for me, I run an 800 and then I have like a turkey avocado BLT sandwich waiting for me.
So good.
Or like a Chipotle chicken avocado melt.
Mm-hmm.
Fire.
That is so good.
Like, really hits a spot every time.
It has that nostalgia factor. I feel like it's like what I grew up eating like all the time. Yeah. No, I would probprobably put it at like, I'd probably put it at 2 or 3 if I had to re-rank. Yeah. But,
for me, Moe's is immediately 5 because they always give us these ridiculous bean and rice burritos. Ugh. And there are so many beans and I don't like them.
Agreed. No, I don't like
them. So I have very strong feelings.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I didn't mess up the top or like, you know, put something up top.
I think
that
Cava,
was bad.
Yeah. Cava's totally a good one for number 1.
Okay. My next one is basic strength exercises, and not all of them are just straight lifting things, but I didn't know how to categorize them, so I just said strength exercises, but it's like stuff that is kind of like the core movements, I think, a lot of these of any sport when you do conditioning. So first up is walking lunges.
With weight or without weight? Like with dumbbells or not? Important distinction.
In my head, I was thinking with dumbbells. So.
With? Okay. I'm not a fan, I will say. I feel like I have done so many lunges and my legs are always burning. Mm-hmm. But they're not the worst thing in the world, honestly. I'm going to put them at 3.
Okay. Safe spot.
Yeah.
All right, pull-ups.
Probably a 5. It's embarrassing. My Monday lift consisted of way too many pull-ups, to which I could not do most of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not a big... Pull-ups are hard.
I'm not a big upper body person in general. We're working on it. I attempted the pull-ups. They just weren't pretty.
Sure. a squat. Just like a basic.
Like barbell.
Yeah.
Like back squat. I'm a big fan. I actually am. I do like a good leg day. I know that's insane to say.
Yeah.
But
I hate squatting.
Yeah, there's really only one exercise that I think I like more than it.
Oh, okay.
And so
I don't think it's on here.
Yeah, then. I would say I have a feeling it's not on there. So I'm going to put this at 1.
Okay. I think that's probably safe then. Box jumps.
Again, not the worst thing in the world, but like the awkward moment when you like catch your toe on the box as you jump up. Yeah. And then you just face plant.
High risk situation.
Yes. Yeah. High risk, not really high reward. So one could say. So I guess I'll put it at a 4.
Okay. All right. Last then at, I guess, number 2. Is going to be burpees.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Which is my immediate number 5.
Yeah, see, I think pull-ups are firmly my number 5. I probably would have put burpees at 4 and box jumps at 2.
Literally one of the first things I thought when I was done with high school sports was I never have to do a burpee again. Like, I'm not
That's
even
so
kidding.
Funny.
That was one of, like, I was like, oh my god, I never have to do this. No one can ever make me do this ever again.
Okay, see, burpees is a form of punishment. Awful. Horrendous. I don't want to be told I have to do burpees. However, if I, like, incorporated it into a workout circuit or something, mm-hmm. I'm actually not super opposed to it.
Okay.
I think they're a good workout.
Okay. I'll never again. Too much trauma associated with that.
Oh, you poor thing. Okay. My last topic is obnoxious sports cities and like their fans. Number 1, we have New York City.
I feel like that's a solid. I'll put them at a solid like 3, because I think they're like obnoxious in like an entertaining way as opposed to like obnoxious in a like I hate you way, if that makes sense.
That's fair.
Yeah, they're just really into it, but it's like more entertaining than it is like I hate their guts. So. Mm-hmm. 3.
Okay, the next one is Boston.
2.
Okay.
Yeah,
why is that?
I don't, a lot of, well.
I'm assuming it's between 1 and 2 for Boston.
Yeah, it was. Lakers-Celtics documentary I watched on ESPN. That was like the 3-part series about Larry Bird and Magic Johnson. That was some of it. The Patriots is some of it.
Well, I was, number 3 is LA.
Oh, we'll do 5.
Okay.
Yeah. They're just not, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they're, like, obnoxious. I think it's just, like, annoying because it's so celebrity-based.
That's fair. Yeah. But not in the same way, but I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Number 4 is Chicago.
I'm going to say 4.
Okay.
So I've left the door open for whoever's left here.
I think that's correct because the last one is Philly.
Let's go! Let's go.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I figured you would hold out.
No, that's 100%. Yeah. Yeah, no explanation needed.
No, I think that's actually a very accurate ranking.
Easy money.
For me, like, Chicago isn't obnoxious, but they have such strong loyalty to teams that are terrible.
That's true.
And I'm like, I admire your optimism, but also it's annoying how you think they're going to be good.
Yeah. Well, you know, you hope and you pray, and then eventually maybe it works out.
Yeah, but I'm like, also, I am a Ferrari fan, so maybe that resonates
with me. We all have our faults.
Yes.
All right, last one we're going to do for Jenna is going to do this one, Gatorade flavors. And I guess it could be, I've kept them pretty generic. It's not like I picked, like, you know, the 2010 special edition, like,
okay,
whatever. So it could be like Gatorade, Powerade, pretty much any energy drink you have, the kind of basic core flavors. So okay. First up is orange.
Okay, see, you would expect me to put this really low, but my hot take is that I love orange flavored things.
I love orange. I love,
oh, do you?
Gatorade.
Okay. Well, I
know
actually,
some people have issues. Yeah.
I didn't realize that liking orange flavored things was controversial until like this year when I started explaining that I like things and people were like, what is wrong with you? Earlier today, I had a conversation about Celsius flavors and I was like, oh, I actually really like the orange one. And she looked at me with such disgust on her face that I almost wanted to apologize. But that's I good. Would actually put that at number two.
Okay, yellow. No, for the second
five. One. The lemon lime Gatorade reminds me. My mom gave that to me every time I was sick when I was younger, and it just, like, to me, like, that when you're sick, you have lemon lime, and it's just not it.
Mm-hmm. No, so fair. I don't think I've ever actually had the yellow Gatorade, so shows how inferior of a flavor it is.
Clearly.
Next up is, oh, I'm realizing there's two types of blue, but next up is blue.
Well, you have to specify.
So I was thinking the light blue one.
The light blue one.
You can think like just then that, but just that Powerade blue. Is like light blue. So that's, it's, yeah.
Okay. I guess, well, it's like, yeah, hard to, because Gatorade is multiple, but I would put blue in general as number one.
Okay.
Because I really, if I'm going to have a Powerade, I would prefer it to be a blue one. And then I really like the dark blue Gatorade.
Hmm.
And like, I like the light blue one,
yeah,
too.
But
you know, so collectively, them. I think they're number
yeah,
one.
That's fair. That's fair. All right. Red.
Red. Red's middle of the road for me. I'll probably go three. I really like the taste of it. It's usually like a fruit punch kind of taste. The only thing is that sometimes it like dyes my lips and I'm not a fan of that.
True.
But I'd put it at three.
So we got spot four left?
Yes, spot four.
Okay, spot four is purple.
Oh. Yeah, no. I mean, I don't really like purple either, but I would definitely choose that over yellow or lemon lime. For sure.
I think you did a pretty good one there. I feel like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really happy with that one.
I would maybe put blue at number one instead of orange.
No,
oh.
I did.
Oh, you did put blue at number
yeah,
one?
Yeah, blue's number one.
Oh, you
orange
put orange
two.
Okay, so then I think like the way you did it would be my exact one.
Okay.
Yeah.
That means it has to be correct.
Literally. If we both agree on it, then there's no other way it could be.
Exactly. Thank you for listening to the 11th episode of The Athlete and the NARP. We hope you enjoyed our discussion of the current state of NIL and its future, as well as our Fun Friday episode where we blindly ranked different sports topics.
Make sure to follow us on Instagram and TikTok at The Athlete and the NARP. You can contact us by email at theathleteandthenarp@gmail.com with content suggestions, clarifications, or questions. Until next time, I'm Claire Fenton.
And I'm Jenna Daly. And this has been
The Athlete and the NARP.